broadcasting from the Unshackled Studios in Melbourne. This is Wilms Front, brought to you by theunshackled.net. Now here's Tim Wilms.
Hello everyone and welcome to the midweek edition of Wilms Front. Today is Wednesday, the 9th of September 2020. It is 7 p.m. here in lockdown Melbourne. We are live on the Wilms Front YouTube and DLive channel, as well as on the Entropy software interface. New cases of coronavirus here in Victoria went up again today to 76, and another 11 deaths were reported, but the total active case numbers, which is how much virus is currently in the community, continues to go down. Active cases in regional Victoria are now below 100, and hospitalizations due to the virus are now below 200. However, these figures are still not going to satisfy the triggers for Dan's slow roadmap out of lockdown, where Melburnians are scheduled to remain locked down and under curfew, albeit one that is at 9 p.m. For another 6 weeks with some other minor tweaks. Things appear still very grim and tough in Victoria at the moment, but contrary to some commentary, we are not alone in being subjected to a second lockdown. The UK city of Bolton is going back into lockdown. They are the second UK city to go back into lockdown after Leicester, and from Monday, the people of England will now only be allowed to gather inside or outside of the home in groups of six in response to a coronavirus spike. So why are our governments deciding to yo-yo its citizens in and out of lockdowns whenever there's a spike or a wave in new coronavirus cases? Recent polling showed that the majority of Victorians still support the lockdown measures to suppress the coronavirus, which is probably why Daniel Andrews has decided to continue the lockdown. In other Australian states with contained coronavirus figures, state border closures, which have been tearing border communities apart, are still highly popular. To discuss the politics of lockdown as a whole, I'm joined by another Melburnian who is a critic of our slow path out of lockdown, Nathan Kyle. Welcome to Wilms Front.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
And now, obviously, during the pandemic and the lockdowns, there's been a lot of new people on social media expressing their frustrations as this pandemic and, well, Melbourne has gone through its second lockdown now. We still don't know. And of course, this one's even stricter. And there doesn't seem an end in sight. So I've met and online so many new people have just started to speak up and become active, particularly on Facebook this year.
Yeah, it's been good to see that people are starting to speak out against government policy. Which has been something that, you know, I've been following for quite some time, whether it be here or overseas. I sort of go into pretty much every situation where I look at government policy that, you know, governments are corrupt to a certain degree, and I, you know, have a distrust of them and the system in which they operate in. So it's good to see people questioning policy now more than ever. And I think now with a lot of people in lockdown, a lot of people having spare time to allocate to researching, I think that's really good. And we've seen a lot of people come out on Facebook, on Instagram, especially in Melbourne, calling out the government for their policies and demanding some transparency.
Yes, and that's what we've been lacking the most here in Victoria. Victoria has, we've got this hotel quarantine judicial inquiry taking place. We still don't know who ultimately made the decision or who was in charge. We're hearing, well, as official evidence all the stories of quarantine breaches and poor practices coming out, but still they really haven't pinpointed who is responsible. And how can that be?
I think it's convenient for Dan Andrews. I think it's convenient that he can hide behind a judicial inquiry and that he can, diffuse responsibility and deflect questions. He's blatantly lied about a few things regarding that as well, which is interesting. So I think he's just playing politics and trying to save his own reputation there.
And he's also hid behind the medical advice. And we've seen this week our Chief Health Officer, Dr. Brett Sutton, say that the curfew, which currently is at 8 p.m., has been during this first six-week lockdown, wasn't something that he recommended. He didn't say he was opposed to it, but obviously still signed off on it. And Daniel Andrews basically said, confessed. Well, he never really confesses, but it's basically the way you interpreted what he says at his press conferences. And he basically said it's to make it easier for police to enforce the lockdown rules. And we've seen over the past couple of weeks just how strictly, if I can put it politely, they enforce those lockdown rules.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually can't believe he came out and said that. There are so many other things that you could say in that instance to justify the decision that you've made there. It just shows how out of his depth he is a little bit in certain respects. I mean, Sutton has totally thrown him under the bus there, which is like, I don't like either of them, to be honest. So, I'm happy either way. But yeah, there's so many other things he could have said something about, if there was a car accident at 3 o'clock in the morning, you've got to divert resources from the health sector in terms of ambulance workers that could be used elsewhere. But no, he didn't say that. And it just shows, it doesn't show verbatim, but it sort of points to his nature as someone who enjoys control. And I think that's the most concerning thing out of that response.
Well, that's certainly been his approach throughout the entire both first and second wave. Just use the big stick approach, stay at home, or you'll receive the 1652 penalty infringement notice, which I think is one of the highest fines for lockdown breaches anywhere in the world. It's certainly higher than New South Wales is 1,000. And that has basically been his approach, not to, and it's been exposed this week, just how not, obviously we already knew about the hotel quarantine stuff up, debacle, whatever you want to call it, but also the contact tracing of Victoria basically uses 20th century technology. They're still using post-it notes and fax machines. And then he also made another admission that he relaxed contact tracing when he thought the first wave was defeated. So his approach has just basically been, if I keep everyone locked up, let's hope that kills the virus.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. And I think this, with the roadmap that he's come out with, people have been dying for a nuanced approach to this. We've got a lot of information coming out from all around the world, epidemiologists, virologists, specialists in their field, well-cited researchers, saying that perhaps lockdowns and treating everything with the big stick is not the way to go, right? You've got businesses here in Melbourne that are basically on their last legs. The hospitality industry is, how is it ever going to recover from this? If we're not opening up for until late November in full capacity, how are these businesses going to survive? It's obvious that, you know, a nuanced approach is needed, and that's why Dan Andrews has copped such backlash for this roadmap that he's come out with.
And it was clear that he wasn't expecting such a backlash, especially with the low trigger thresholds to basically have some sort of normality. We've got to get, and I don't even understand this, is it five new daily cases over a 2-week period, or is it five new mystery cases? And we do know that mystery cases are different from new cases, and so it's not even clear in that regard. Now we sort of walk back and said, oh, we might move the thresholds, or after several epidemiologists questioned his modeling through that super computer.
Yeah, which is good to see. It's good to see people coming out in Melbourne. I mean, it's good to see that people are finally coming out in Melbourne. You know, people who are revered in their field actually saying, no, your modelling is a little bit off, and we need to please explain for it. I mean, epidemiologists from Europe have been talking about the virus itself, how deadly it is. They've been debating it, and they've not been listened to. It's happened in Europe, it's happened in the UK. You know, the initial models that came out of the Imperial College of London were so far off, it's not even funny. And they were the models that were used to put people into lockdown in the UK.
So, and it's been, I assume it's still being used to put them back into lockdown, because we're just coming out of winter here in the Southern Hemisphere. It shouldn't be a surprise that during July, August, during Melbourne winter, there were more people getting this basically worst version of the flu. And obviously up in Europe, they were opening up because obviously the virus doesn't spread as much during summer, but obviously they're now in autumn, and as it gets colder, and we know that the UK gets super super cold, you just wonder what the daily cases are going to be like in December, and is it just going to be locked down for the whole winter there?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. I still cannot believe that it's being handled the way that it's being handled. The World Health Organization has toed and froed with lockdowns. Are lockdowns good? Are lockdowns not good? Does asymptomatic transmission happen? Does it not happen? You've got Maria Kirchhoff coming out one day saying that asymptomatic transmission is rare, and then you've got coming out the next day saying that it's not. It was irresponsible for me to say that in some legalese statement that was obviously written by a lawyer. So, yeah, it naturally you would assume that in the colder months, a virus is going to be more prevalent, and in the warmer months, it'll disappear to a certain degree. What's the game plan from now on? Are we, every time we get a virus, are we going to just lock people down again? Is that going
to
be the game plan?
Are we going to basically have a winter lockdown and then open up again during the summer months? Because the last three flu seasons in Australia have been extremely deadly, and I've repeatedly said on this show, and people have been following me for a number of years will know that I got the flu in the winter of 2019. It was absolutely horrible, and it was obviously is contagious and transmissible because who I co-host the Uncuckables with, David Hiscock and Maddie Rose from XYZ, they also got the flu as well. We don't know who patient zero was because nobody did contact tracing for the flu back then. But you see my point.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I know one of my mates got the flu last year and said it was pretty bad.
Yeah, so, mine was pretty bad.
Yeah. So yeah, this is the thing. Is this the new normal now, as they refer to it? Is this going forward? How are we going to operate? And it seems eerily enough that that's the way things are heading. And I think this is why you're seeing a sort of a backlash from society, particularly here in Melbourne, saying that this particular roadmap, this particular way of locking people down is not sustainable. We've got to come up with a nuanced approach.
And obviously a lot of Victorians were disturbed last week with the police arrests and charges of incitement to five Victorians. And, well, it's had over 10 million views now, the arrest of Ballarat pregnant mother Zoe Buller. Obviously, it went all around the world. Victoria Police, well, through Assistant Commissioner Luke Cornelius, he said even though the optics were terrible, Victoria Police acted appropriately. Despite those arrests and warning of Victoria Police presence, there were still around about 200 people who turned up to the Shrine of Remembrance on Saturday. Police said they made 17 arrests, issued 160 fines. So, and yeah, obviously seeing that amount of police on the street, and there was another disturbing image from that day, two elderly ladies who were approached by five police officers. These are the people, like two old ladies, they're people who we're supposed to protect from the virus. They're the type of vulnerable people, and you see the police standing over them, and people like, are they really the greatest threat out on the street at the moment? That's what a lot of people thought when they saw the footage, which has also gone viral.
I mean, you know, I watch a couple of shows that operate in the US. They both covered the arrest of that woman in Ballarat. So the people of the world are watching Victoria and they're seeing what's going on. I understand, like, I'm wary of cop bashing because, you know, we see the defund the police movement.
Yeah, and we see where there's no police in a state over in those US West Coast cities such as Portland and Seattle, where it's not just that the police are told to stand down, but they don't feel they have the backing of the authorities, so they just stand down themselves. So we sort of have the two contrasts, Melbourne and Portland and Seattle.
Yeah. And like, we live in a world of extremes at the moment, it seems. You know, it's either one or the other. There's nothing, it's either left wing or you're alt-right. There's no nuance. There's hardly any nuanced discussion around anything at the moment. You know, just as a commentary on society in general. But yeah, I know that people within the force are apprehensive in doing some of the things that they are doing, and they're sort of questioning, right? But these people have got families to feed as well, so it puts them between a rock and a hard place as well. When they're put into those positions, you know, having the riot squad out there for 200 people, I mean, just really, just it's just beggars belief.
And we see it's been revealed this week, the mobile surveillance vans that have been deployed near parks, the drones that are flying above, and there's also some new police helicopters that are being deployed. I'm not sure at night you've heard planes or helicopters going over where you live. I've heard them repeatedly, and it certainly grates on you because it's not something you're used to.
Yeah, 100%. Surveillance measures have been rolled out probably on a more global scale since probably 9/11. But since the pandemic's definitely started, we've seen more and more surveillance technology coming in for our own safety, which is concerning because, you know, we know that we're tracked with our smartphones as it is. I don't like that that's the case, but it is the case. But, you know, when do the people stop at a certain point and go, this has gone too far? You know, you can't, people are trading up all these, and some of them are doing it unknowingly, trading these liberties that they have, you know, the freedom of movement without detection. They're trading up these liberties for safety and security. And often when that happens, you just never get them back. So it's extremely worrying to see these things happen.
And now, as I mentioned, Dan Andrews, well, through his I Stand With Dan hashtag still has a lot of support, and there's still a lot of prominent people still supporting his continuing lockdowns and slow roadmap out, such as former ABC radio host John Fain, alleged comedian now Magda Szczepanski, project host Michelle Laurie, a feminist academic Jenna Price, and communist advocate Van Badham. And I say to them, how much lockdown is enough for you? How much longer are you prepared to stay at home for? Because we've all been told this is, well, not indefinite, but just to them, because obviously, well, Van Badham, she used to do a lot of public speaking engagements and appearances and that, and so I just wonder, well, when does she want to get back out and about? Then you see what I'm saying? Like, how long is this acceptable to you? You still stand with Dan, still support his plan, but when's it going to get too much for you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sick of people on the TV and out of touch celebrities and politicians lecturing people on, hardworking people on how to live their lives.
And obviously, for some people who, well, their personality, they're happy at home most of the time, would rather have a night in than go out. I've always been that type of person, so I've sort of been able to cope more mentally with that. But for other people, they like to live life in the fast lane. They like to live a nomad gypsy lifestyle. This type of lockdown where basically all of Australia is grounded, you can't leave the country, state borders are shut, it's a drastic change in lifestyle.
Yeah, well, I used to live on a tropical island called Hamilton Island. And you would get, after a certain period of time, you would get a bit of cabin fever from being on the island, because there's only so much that you can do on the island. Mm. So, you know, it's sort of the same feeling now, whereas you want to go out. I'd love to go up to Queensland for a week and be able to, you know, get some fresh air, you know, sit by the beach for a while and clear my thoughts, but you can't do that. And I've got mates who are really, really struggling with mental health. Mm. There's this one girl I know, she lives by herself.
In Melbourne or elsewhere?
Melbourne,
yeah.
So, but yeah, there's so many other consequences and ramifications for this roadmap. And yeah.
Well, we've got tomorrow, Are You Okay Day, which is, it happens every year on 10th of September to raise awareness of mental health and ask your friends and co-workers, are you okay? And obviously in Melbourne, we are not doing okay. This was the Richard Wollstonecroft from the Report of Tiger Mountain did a vlog on that this morning. This I've seen floating around Facebook. No, I'm not okay. On Thursday, 10th of September, let the Victorian government know that you're not okay. Post to Dan Andrews and MP's Facebook and Twitter pages. And this is the sort of thing no amount of extra mental health funding is or hotlines is really going to help.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're social animals. We need to be in the company of others. And, you know, just throwing money at people and resources at, you know, these hotlines is not going to do anything. I mean, Nick Coatsworth comes out the other day and says routine's important and encourages people to make their own bed.
Yeah, so he sort of said today, oh, I didn't mean to sort of belittle or insult the Victorians, but it's sort of the thing. Well, is that the best you could sort of do? I mean, you're there, one of the deputy chief medical officers of Australia.
Yeah, yeah. It just shows how out of touch some of these people really are.
Now we've also seen because it's easy for sort of Daniel Andrews to say, "Oh, I don't care what, for example, Sam Newman or Jeff Kennett say about my policies," but it's a bit more difficult for him to sort of dismiss what actual doctors and epidemiologists say about his roadmap out of lockdown. And last week, the COVID Doctors Network was launched, where it started, I think, with around about 10 doctors signing this letter to Daniel Andrews asking him to ease the lockdown. Now, the site has been down for the past few days. If you go to COVID doctorsnetwork.com, it comes up with this. Now, I've been told that there's nothing sinister about this. It's something that they're trying to fix so that the site is able to cope with everything. So there is no sort of, I know everyone sort of has a theory about if something like that goes down, but no, nothing sinister about that.
Yeah, I'd like to believe that. but yeah, it could just be something, but yeah, it just seems fitting that's occurred, even, you know, especially when it's getting that much public support too.
And now obviously there's been a lot of fear and accusations that Victoria is now a police state. We're told that no, your democratic rights and freedoms, they're still in place. You're just not allowed to protest out in public. You can be an activist online, which is true. I mean, we're not a communist China where if you mock Xi Jinping, you're going to get your door knocked down. You will if you're organizing a protest, as we saw last week. But I noticed that, or in that vein of online activism, there's been quite a few virtual events to that people can tune into, show their support towards, to protest against the lockdown and the curfew and the continuing state of emergency. A lot of people here would have probably seen some of them. One that's been going for a while is the weekly Reignite Democracy Australia, which takes place every Friday at 7:30 p.m. They've got some prominent voices and also some Victorian parliamentarians such as Bernie Finn, Liberal MLC, Brad Rosewell, Liberal MP for Sandringham, David Limbrick, Liberal Democrat MLC, and that is a blossoming movement. There's another one that has popped up of recent times, Victoria Ford, which I know has been criticised because some of the organisers of, leaders of that, members of the Liberal Party, but that doesn't distract from the messages that they're putting out. Theirs is a bit more you'd say crass, give Dan the boot. It's time to stand up to Daniel Andrews. Now you can do it from home. Victoria Ford has launched Give Dan the Boot campaign, asking Victorians to join us at an at-home demonstration against Premier Andrews. Please place a pair of boots or shoes at the front gate or around your fence this Sunday, 13th of September, and post a photo of this event and use the tag Give Down the Boot. Give Down the Boot is a silent protest, but the image of thousands of boots outside the gates of Victorian households will decisively convey that the Victorian people have no faith in the Premier. Let's send Premier Dan Landers a message. We want to give him the boot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that one. Like, yeah, I suppose if you get a fair amount of people to do it, it might make a difference. But there have been actually. There's one that's caught my interest was the Operation Mockingbird, which is sort of reversing the narrative, which is something that Voice of Victoria have been doing, and the Millions Rise people as well. Unfortunately, had their page deleted last week, but essentially every time you see someone post something that you know, contradicts your beliefs, I suppose, or that you just believe is pure propaganda, you jump on there and you know, you leave a comment, you make your voice known, fill up the comments section, because you notice that, especially on Dan Andrews' page, it's just a cesspool of Dan Andrews supporters.
Yeah, which is amazing. There's no sort of angry reacts or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, if I was him and I was under this amount of political pressure, I would be employing some bots to...
Well, we do know that he has 64 staffers, 13 more than the Prime Minister, so maybe they're deleting all the comments.
Yeah, yeah. Comments. Yeah, people have been saying that's been happening. Mm. So, you know.
There is also another protest that has been promoted. This... has been promoted by Catherine Cummings, independent MLC, and also by David Limbrick, the curfew noise protest. End emergency powers, all Australians, please join in protest with Victorians to show your support. Australia must find a better way. We must trust each other. We must manage risk proportionally. Show your support a better way. Get outside on your doorstep and open a window and make some noise. Sound your car horn, shout out, make music or bang on your pots and pans. Please share your experience, AustraiaUnited.org.
Might have to get the guitar out for that one.
Yeah. We'll see how these virtual protests go on the weekend, the Boots one. It reminds me of that Simpsons episode, Bart versus Australia, where they invented that booting was a traditional Australian form of punishment. I'm not sure that was the intention there. That's we know that there's so much... because the Simpsons have done everything, so many Simpsons-related references to this pandemic.
Oh yeah, I know, it's crazy. I posted one on my Instagram that was about a virus. Essentially, it's like they're plotting a new virus.
Yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah. There's a page COVID related Simpsons meme. It's based. It's run by an Australian, and there was one where. When Bart's trying to imagine a better field trip to than the Box Factory one, has Dan Andrews now, instead of going into stage 4 lockdown, we're going into stage 4 lockdown. And then Victoria's like, damn, COVID's ruined my imagination.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I suppose if you don't laugh at that sort of stuff, it's you're probably just going to cry.
Now, another indication that freedom and democracy has not been suspended in Victoria is that local government elections are proceeding in October as scheduled. It's always been mail-in voting for local government. You'll get at the beginning of October your mail-in ballots. And I always say... with local government elections, make sure that you, because people aren't affiliated with a party for local government elections, so make sure you don't accidentally vote for a Labor, Green, Communist candidate.
Yep, I would say that's pretty important.
Because I'm seeing it on my sponsored Facebook feed, candidates who they talk about these motherhood statements about what they want for their local area. I want blah, 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 this and that. Yeah, but how are you going to achieve that? Are you wanting to basically have local councils be less intrusive on our daily lives, or are you wanting to basically raise the rates and spend it on all manner of programs?
Yeah, yeah. It's important to distinguish that.
Now, obviously, things are very restricted here in Melbourne with the state home orders, the 5 kilometre radius, and the curfew. And despite in the other states and territories there being no restrictions on leaving the home, they still have a public gathering limits, and we saw with the Freedom Day protest in Sydney, where public gatherings are limited to 20, the directive from the Police Minister David Elliott and the Health Minister Brad Hazzard is that all the people who were at that Freedom Day event in Sydney were counted as part of the same event, and so that's why the police went around fining and dispersing people. There were quite some ugly scenes in there in Sydney. It sort of felt like New South Wales police were sort of like reminding the public, hey, remember us?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, yeah, I did see a few arrests that had occurred, and you know, just the heavy-handed approach is just concerning, because you know, and like I said to you before, like I don't want to get into police bashing because I've got a difficult job, but
well, that's why I said this came down from the health and police minister.
Well, you know, isn't that just concerning to say? I mean, they're just, like I said, they're just following orders, but you know, some of these officers, I saw one in Brisbane that was having a laugh with the protesters and joking about conspiracy theorists, and I thought that was probably a better way to approach that. I know that they are in a little bit of a different position in terms of their restrictions, but I think there's a way to handle things too with tact and nuance as well.
Yeah, that key word discretion. I did see it showed up in my Twitter feed that because both Brisbane and the Gold Coast, due to some new daily cases, they've limited indoor and public gatherings to 10, and they've given a warning to protesters on Brisbane and the Gold Coast that they can't gather as they did at the previous weekend's Freedom Day, and police commissioner up there and the police minister gave them a spray.
Oh, I didn't know about that. Isn't that just I mean, that's just convenient for them, I would have thought, coming out with that information.
Now, we'll talk about the hard border closures now. And obviously, Anastasia Palaszczuk, the Queensland Premier, she's come into the most criticism for her hard border closure, particularly because she made a brain surgery patient quarantine in a motel when she came back from Sydney to Queensland. We had that unborn baby die in northern New South Wales because had to get treatment in Sydney, not the Gold Coast. And then last week we saw those 400 AFL officials allowed to quarantine in a hub at a luxury resort on the Gold Coast, that from the aerial shots we saw no social distancing. They were all mingling, but it was defended because, oh, they're regularly tested. But, well, tell that to the lady who had to quarantine in a motel after brain surgery.
Yeah, it seems that the rules apply to one specific group of people and not to another. I think that's the most disconcerting thing, and the most annoying thing for someone like me who's looked into, you know, governmental corruption and that sort of thing for quite some time, is that those in positions of authority and positions of power have a different set of rules for them. And the common man, all of the rules apply to them, but for those in positions of authority, only the rules apply to them sometimes. So, but we're seeing more and more people wake up to this, which is good.
And that's one thing for Anastasia Palaszczuk, as well, we expect double standards from politicians, but for this to be defended by the Chief Health Officer of Queensland, Dr. Jeanette Young, saying, yes, I signed off on this, this is COVID safe. You're sort of like, are you serious? I mean, you're supposed to be an objective medical professional, and you're saying it's okay for the AFL officials who've come from Melbourne, the ultimate coronavirus hotspot, to just frolic around poolside, tanning.
Well, if that's the case, let's get these people tested and get them into the state. Then, if that's the way that a precedent's been set there, let's allow people to be tested. Let's say 3 days after they arrive. If they don't test positive, they're good to go. So, you know, I don't understand why that thing isn't, something like that isn't being done.
Now, as we've established, Daniel Andrews, he's basically said, I don't care what anyone says about my handling of this, which, so he doesn't respond to the criticism that's levied at him, or the memes that are levied all around the internet, the dictator Dan Kim, Dan Jong on whatever. There's heaps of different names, but yeah. Anastasia Palaszczuk, she's shown herself to be a bit more sensitive, saying, oh, a lot of this criticism is unfair and disingenuous, or I shouldn't be subjected to this. And of course, people are going to be like, cry me a river.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I mean, you come out with any sort of opinion, or you're in any position of authority or power, you've got to cop what comes your way. That's part of the job. They get paid really, really well to do what they do. So, you know, Crimea River's exactly right.
Well, she's done it again today, Anastasia Palaszczuk, because Tom Hanks and his wife, Rita Wilson, have been allowed to return to the Gold Coast to resume filming Baz Luhrmann's Elvis Presley biopic. They're allowed to quarantine in a luxury resort at Broadbeach. Anastasia Palaszczuk, she's defended this. And you could also say, since, well, Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson, they got their coronavirus back in March, it's extremely almost impossible to catch the coronavirus again, but still, it's still not a good look.
No, spot on there. I can't believe that.
And she is definitely giving Dan Andrews a run for his money as the worst state premier.
I mean, by the sounds of it, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, she has basically almost eliminated the virus from the state, and well, when they had a few cases, she reduced the limits from 30 people gathering down to 10 immediately. So she's certainly doing the knee-jerk approach when there's a spike in cases. And since with Dan's plan, that it's basically going for elimination, and Anastasia Palaszczuk said, I won't open the border with New South Wales until they have 28 days of zero community transmission, which is extremely difficult to obtain. It's basically these politicians, these leaders, have no faith in their government's ability at contact tracing or their healthcare system, that they don't feel that they could handle and contain, well, an outbreak.
Yeah, 100%. And you ask any nurse at any other time other than this, they always work long hours. They're always rust off their feet. So we know that these sectors are perhaps underfunded and understaffed and overworked. And this is the fault of the government for not channeling taxpayer dollars into these sectors in preparation for something like this. If they barely get through a normal flu season, right, wouldn't you look to divert more funds into that sector?
Well, we saw as a whole, the nation was unprepared with the massive amount of ventilators that needed to be ordered in, the testing kit. Supposedly, the first lockdown is so we could get everything in place in case there was a second wave and we'd know how to contain it. But obviously, Victoria is the starkest example. I don't know what they did during the first lockdown because they weren't ready for the second wave. You were supposed to use this time when there were lack of resources, a lot of unknowns, to get everything in place in case there was a second wave. And it doesn't look like too much has sort of changed in, well, their own confidence into containing a second wave.
Yeah, either the government is horribly corrupt or there is an ulterior motive here that is coming from directions from an organization like the WHO. So it's, I mean, you thought you would have, learned from aged care outbreaks in New South Wales because it's certainly affected aged care down in Victoria.
Yes, which with tragic consequences, that's certainly been the darkest aspect of the pandemic here. New South Wales has been seen as, well, the gold standard for contact tracing and also staying open while containing outbreaks and continuing to suppress the virus. They're still open with no mask mandate, although nightclubs, for example, aren't open. We've seen in Queensland nightclubs are open, but you're not allowed to dance. Some nightclubs have got fines for dancing up there. But at least people are still, it's a, New South Wales has got sort of some semblance of, and again, it's a horrible word, COVID normal.
Yeah, I hear that the hospitality sector up there is really, really struggling. I was listening to Alan Jones talk to Eddie McGuire and Luke Darcy this morning.
Oh, was he on their show this morning?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Oh, well, good on Eddie, because I know that he's a hardcore Labor man for having Alan Jones on the show.
Yeah, absolutely, good on him. And good on him for letting Luke Darcy talked to Dan Andrews.
Yeah, that was excellent.
Yeah, present a different point of view. I looked at that study that he actually referenced in The Lancet, which pointed to lockdowns not being responsible for an overall increase in mortality with the virus. So... yeah, that was really, really good. It's good to see that. And you see it on, Channel 7 as well. Koshy, say what you want about him, but he was having a bit of a crack at Jenny McCarthy.
Yeah, that was good as well. And I say about the mainstream media, better late than never, because you were egging on, Dan, to go to stage 4 to crack down on COVID idiots and anti-maskers. And now, you finally... applying some real scrutiny, and well, now we're actually finding out just how poor Victoria's contact tracing system is. And again, Dan, again, not confessing that his system isn't up to scratch, but what is that fact finding to New South Wales this week and digitalizing the system? That's his way of sort of. We've learned how to read Dan Andrews well when he's sort of, because we know he's never going to admit that he's wrong. But you just sort of read into that, yeah, that's a admission there without him saying that he stuffed that up.
Yeah. Do you know if Victoria was offered at any point help from the New South Wales government or the federal government with contact tracing? Because I cannot understand how we were on a non-digitalized system. You know, and they were. You'd think that if we're all in this together, that he would be accepting help from these, from the federal government. You know, you talk about the ADF and the hotel quarantine, you'd think, you know, he wouldn't just be looking after his mates. And but yeah, it just shows his shortcomings as a leader, I guess.
Yeah, and I just noticed that there was a Daily Mail article. Again, we should sort of take that with a grain of salt. But they got some body language experts to analyze Dan at the press conferences. How much of a toll it is taking on his demeanor based on his body language during the press conferences. There's constant calls for his resignations now. There's speculation, rumors that his Labor caucus, they're deciding on a replacement, and there's even that petition to call on the governor to dissolve the state parliament, to call a fresh election. That would be very unprecedented if a state governor took that course of action, but just shows you the growing anger and despair in the community.
I think really what was the catalyst for this was Parliament sitting last week. And you have to think, if Parliament had been sitting all the way through, would we be in the position now that we are in?
It only sat last week so that Dan Andrews could pass the 6-month extension to the state of emergency powers. We heard some really good speeches from Liberal MPs and Crossmesh members opposing the extension. Probably the best on the Liberal side were Matthew Guy, former Liberal opposition leader. If only he'd shown such passion 2 years ago. Also, James Newbury, the member for Brighton, he also gave a good speech. And also Tim Smith as well, who basically, well, he was the catalyst for the firecracker being put under the Victorian Parliamentary Liberal Party when he called Dan Andrews a friendless loser back in, was back in June, and he did his own how dare you in his speech to Dan Andrews, blaming ordinary Victorians for the second wave when it's his government's incompetence. They were all really good speeches, and it was put to me by a friend. We're seeing a few more politicians grow some balls during this pandemic. I'm not sure if you follow Craig Kelly on Facebook, but he has been particularly outspoken about what's happening in Victoria.
I actually started following his page last week, and it's good to see real strong opposition. You know, I didn't really follow any of these people, you know, like Tim Smith's and Matthew Guy's, but the speeches that they have made, I think, are incredibly important. Like I was saying, I think that's been the catalyst for more public debate surrounding the response to COVID-19. You've seen since the mainstream media has intensified their scrutiny, of little scrutiny there was before, but they've turned up the heat on Andrews, which has been good to see. Perhaps this has given, you know, someone like a Catherine Cumming coming out, David Limbrick, perhaps this has given confidence for people in the medical industry to come out as well. And then you've got these doctors that have come out and are saying that there's another way. You know, we need some independent discussion around this. You needed, a diverse range of voices giving opinions and advice to Andrews. People were dying out for it, and it sort of made some people perhaps who were Andrews supporters realize that it's not quite the echo chamber that they thought it was. You know, I think a lot of these people who support Dan Andrews live in a little bit of an echo chamber to a degree. They surround themselves with people who support Dan Andrews, who have similar views, and there is nothing more important, you know, whether in politics or anything, to surround yourself with a diverse range of people who challenge you on your opinions and hold you to account for what you say.
I had the pleasure of interviewing Craig Kelly. It was just at the end of the first wave on my show. I'd love to have him on again not too soon. And he made that point that he said that even amongst his staffers, he doesn't want them to be yes men. He wants them to challenge him and have a robust discussion and debate as well.
Yeah, of course. It's good to see someone like him thinks that way too. And you see with the censorship on Facebook, you know, them censoring one side of the political spectrum, it seems, and censoring anything that contradicts World Health Organization guidelines, and it shuts down any discourse that should be had. And you know, we're not talking about, you know, conspiracy theories like, oh, the royal family are reptiles. We're talking about citing epidemiologists who have a different opinion. World-renowned researchers, Dr. John Ioannidis from Stanford University, you know, one of the most cited researchers of the last 20 years. You know, Dr. Sukhradeep Bhakti too in Germany. These people have been saying from the start that there are other ways of tackling this crisis. There are other ways that all is not as it seems. And the narrative that is being pushed by the mainstream media, by world figures, needs to be questioned.
Now, as I said in my introduction, we're seeing the UK go back into the lockdown strategy, which, as I call it, the yo-yo approach, in and out. And if you don't mind me, I'll just go through this Sky News UK article. So this is about social gatherings of more than six people to be banned in England on Monday. So first offenders will be fined £100. That's obviously a lot less than the $1,652 fine that you get in Victoria. That's roughly $200 Australian, which will double on each further repeat offence of up to £3,200, which is around $6,400. I know the thing about Victoria's fines is that, because I think there was a person who got 24 a penalty infringement notices in Victoria, but they're all for the same amount. And even though they've got 24, Victoria Police not seeking to jail them. So this is what Boris Johnson said: we need to act now to stop the virus spreading. And the government advertising campaign entitled Hands, Face, Space. That's quite cringe. Oh. And then we've got going down here. It is absolutely critical that people now abide by these rules and remember the basics. And if we go further down here, the crackdown comes after warnings from government medical chiefs that the public, particularly young people, are now too relaxed about the coronavirus, with the result that COVID-19 rates are now 20 per 100,000 people. Government announcement follows the Health Secretary Matt Hancock imposing a ban on socializing with people from other households in Bolton, with restaurants on the town limited to now serving takeaway food, and a 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew on all venues. Head of Mr. Hancock's Bolton announcement, England's Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Professor Jonathan Van Tam, warned of a bumpy ride over the next few months unless the virus was taken incredibly seriously. And again, so basically we're seeing this nanny state approach, this health policy by technocrats, that we know what's good for you, do what we say, follow the rules, that's the only way.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And unfortunately, unless there is greater public scrutiny, it's only going to get worse. I think what we're seeing here in Victoria, and I was, you know, the first lockdown, I was sort of like, okay, I didn't know much about it. I was like, all right.
Yeah, no. I was the same as well.
I was like, all right, no worries. Like, I'll go into lockdown. It's kind of a new experience.
Yeah, that was sort of the attitude of a lot of people. Oh, yeah, this is, you know, we could do this, you know, in the short term. It's a bit different, you know, I can sort out all the junk in my cupboard, learn how to cook again, that sort of thing. But, yeah, obviously, with it, well, especially with Victoria, then opening up and then going back into lockdown, then extreme draconian stage 4 lockdown, it certainly is way different than the first time.
What precedent does this set? You know, like we were discussing earlier, every time a new pathogen comes in, every time the new seasonal flu comes in, it's like, oh, look how well, you know, it worked for COVID. You know, let's say a couple of years down the road, let's look how well it worked for COVID. I guess we'll just shut down now during winter. You know, don't worry about all the small businesses that, that's going to affect. Let's do it to, you know, to protect you, right? And Neil Ferguson, who was the guy who was responsible for the Imperial College of London bogus epidemiological reports, came out and said a couple of months later that two-thirds of the people that had died with COVID in the UK this year probably would have died anyway. So not to say that, you know, not to justify, you know, us being open using that, but I thought that was an interesting interesting take on it.
Well, the full impact of the lockdowns, both economic and health-wise, won't be fully felt until the aftermath, because obviously we don't get the full suicide statistics until the end of the year, and there could be carryover suicides in the years to come because of the lockdowns, the livelihoods and businesses destroyed. Obviously, the people who didn't get their cancer screenings or seek medical care because of other reasons as well, because all the hospitals were reserved for COVID, and obviously hospitality at being the first to be required to shut under coronavirus restrictions, but retail, like in-person retail shops, there's a long list of retailers in Australia who've said that they're not going to reopen post this pandemic. Obviously, the move to online shopping has led to a lot of retail jobs being shedded, but this has just turbocharged it with, well, a lot of retailers now going to, as it's called, contactless click and collect or delivery.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think a lot of businesses will probably restructure moving forward, maybe due to the economic damage that they have seen from this. And this is just me speculating, you know, with the advancements in technology that we've seen, you know, in the future, how many of the jobs that are here today are going to be here in the future anyway. So yeah, I think society, you know, we see people at the World Economic Forum talking about this being a catalyst for, you know, the Great Reset. So it'll be, yeah, you're right. We won't see the full effect of the lockdown, particularly with mental health. I mean, you know, depression is something that does creep up on you. And it can be very, very hard to shake as well. So, if we get out of this lockdown and things are good for a couple of months, but then we start to realize the economic damage that has occurred, you know, things won't go back to the way they were.
Now, the Morrison government, they announced, well, it was a few weeks ago now, that they'd secured a manufacturing and distribution deal for the Oxford University coronavirus vaccine, which is going through stage three clinical trials. They've also done the same deal with a University of Queensland trial, and this is what Liberal MPs were promoting on their Facebook. The Morrison government, Australia secures 84.8 million COVID-19 vaccine doses free and voluntary, in italics there, for all Australians, because Scott Morrison initially said he'd make it as mandatory as possible, but then backtracked from it. He did previously say that he would consider making the COVID Safe app mandatory, which, as we've seen, it's been a complete flop there, the COVID Safe app, and not everyone has smartphones. But obviously, this vaccine is a bit different. But then we got the news today, and I'll share this. The news from today is that the Oxford vaccine trial facing challenge as volunteers suffer suspected a serious adverse reaction. Now, we're told that this is common during a clinical trials, and they just said this is a standard review procedure, routine action, and that they don't know that, well, we're not told what this suspected adverse reaction is, whether they got the actual vaccine or a placebo, whether it is related to the vaccine. But the point is, given that the perception is that this vaccine has been rushed, people are very suspicious about this vaccine. A lot of people are suspicious about all vaccine. If this vaccine does get approved eventually, the fact that this has been reported is going to make people even more suspicious about wanting to take it.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think it's been really, really good. I was reading something from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This morning. He runs the Children's Health Defense Fund. He is not an anti-vaxxer, contrary to what the mainstream media will have you believe. He believes in safe vaccines, but he's been fighting vaccine injury on behalf of children that have been vaccine injured in the US for a number of years. And he was saying that a vaccine trial has never had this much public scrutiny in the past, and that it is really, really good that that's happening. Initially, I believe with this vaccine that they were going to test it against a different vaccine that they believed to be safe, but wasn't really safe. But I do believe now they're testing against a placebo, and that having this sort of public scrutiny on it is really, really good, because it's going to hold these people to account, despite the fact that there will be no financial liability if people do have any adverse reactions once it is rolled out. But yeah, I think people will grow more and more skeptical regarding this vaccine as it gets closer and closer to the time where it will be rolled out.
Now, apparently there are 9 potential coronavirus vaccines in stage 3 clinical trials, which is the final stage, the most advanced, widespread clinical testing stage. There are 170 in total at various stages of testing. So if this one falls through, it's not the end of it. But the reason why there's a lot of interest from Australians in this vaccine, particularly Victorians, because, well, given Dan's slow roadmap and this basic de facto elimination strategy, a vaccine looks like it's the only way that Victoria can get to normal, which his plan says that normal will be when a vaccine is found.
Yeah, and you know, they say that it'll be voluntary, but I wonder if there's going to be any coercion strategies implemented, or whether it's going to be completely voluntary.
Well,
at all.
That's what Dr. Nick, or Dr. Nick Scotesworth, everyone just calls him Dr. Nick now, talked about the incentive / big stick program, which, yeah, is what you were talking about.
Yeah, the no jab, no pay kind of deal. And I think, you know, I'm not sure that that's entirely ethical. But we'll see if that actually happens. I imagine, and I've spoken to a lot of people about this, I imagine that there would be a large amount of public backlash if there was something like that implemented.
I mean, they still haven't forced people to take coronavirus tests. I know that New South Wales, for their hotel quarantine now, if you refuse a COVID test, you have to stay 24 days instead of 14. And Jenny Makarkos, our health minister, even admitted, no, we can't force people to take coronavirus tests against their will.
Yeah, which is which is good. And I think there's a couple of there's one law firm that doesn't believe that something like that would be able to occur. So
yeah, G&B lawyers, their partner Nathan Buckley is crowdfunding a class action against South Australia's no jab no play policy.
Yeah, so you know, there are good people out there who are, you know, willing to put their reputation and names on the line, which is good to see.
Another development over the past 24 hours. I'm not sure that you followed this. There was two Australian journalists, the Financial Review's Michael Smith and the ABC's Bill Burgess, who flew out of Shanghai on Monday in fears for their safety because China wanted them in relation to a national security investigation. And we've seen today that Chinese media officials have been targeted as part of Asia AFP investigation into allegations of foreign interference by a former New South Wales backbench staffer here. And these are the, there's two Chinese scholars and two media officials. Now, China has accused Australia of hypocrisy, saying, hey, you're accusing us of cracking down on foreign journalists. Look what you're doing. And obviously the past year, there's been a lot of scrutiny about China's de facto takeover of Hong Kong. They arrested a 12-year-old girl for protesting, but given what we saw in Victoria on the weekend and the detainment of RV Yemeni for reporting on Saturday's protest, and they threatened Paul Dowsley, Channel 7 reporter, with arrest. Are we really one to criticize totalitarian China for their treatment of our journalists?
Yeah, valid point. Mm. I mean, I think China's a little bit far ahead, but yeah,
yes.
It's pretty ironic. Like, yeah, we're down here, and then, you know, freedom of the press is I watched that video of Vimini, and I watched the conversation between Paul Dowsley and the other bloke that was there, and it's just freedom of the press is important, and you know, there's a lot of propaganda that comes through the mainstream media networks, but you still need the press to a certain degree, so you know.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the only thing that is holding Dan Andrews to account at the moment. His daily press conferences, which during the Q&A, it's quite. I don't watch them anymore. I just can't stand them anymore. I'd rather, even though covering these things is part of my job running the Unshackled. There's only so much you can take, and so much of the questioning goes around in circles because, of course, Dan Andrews doesn't answer the question, or he's trying to explain one of his new rules, how it applies in that, and you just sort of it's hard to watch.
One thing I've noticed with him is he's an absolute expert in getting the ball in his court where he wants it. So someone will ask him a question, and he'll use a couple of different words that are sort of interconnected but don't mean the same thing to get him to a place where he wants to answer a question that wasn't necessarily the question that the journalist wanted answered, but further develops his own narrative. I noticed that in his interview with Luke Darcy, how he would go from something that Luke asked him and then use a couple of words in between to get to a question that he wanted to explain.
He's not alone. He's not the only politician who does that. They all do it to some degree, and they don't answer the question. They give provide an answer that they want to, but it's not the question that was asked.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, yeah, political doublespeak.
Well, thank you so much, Nathan, for joining me tonight. As I said, it's great to interview and come across and meet people such as yourself online during these concerning times. And, well, none of us know what the numbers are going to be tomorrow. Another meme that people have been sharing that basically the daily coronavirus numbers now, it's basically like lotto numbers. You never know what they're going to be.
Yeah, 100%. No, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. It's been good.
Yeah, and thank you to my audience again for your comments and interaction. This has been two consecutive nights of Wilmsfront, a special Tuesday show last night and the regular Wednesday show this week. It will be back to just the weekly Wednesday show, 7 p.m. Melbourne time on YouTube and DLive next week. But of course, in the meantime, I'll be back tomorrow night, 8:30 p.m., Melbourne time for the Uncuckables on the show YouTube and DLive, and then Trad Tasman Talk, 6 p.m. Friday on the Unshackled YouTube channel, when myself and Dewey DeBoer, he's not just a Kiwi but an Aucklander who's at level 2.5 lockdown, we trade stories about who's got it worst in terms of government overreach in that regard. So we'll see where we're at on Friday. So thank you so much everyone for your time. Good night, and I'll see you tomorrow night.
Thanks for tuning in to Wilmsfront. Visit timwilms.com or Rational Rise TV to view the archive of episodes, and keep visiting theunshackled.net to view all our shows and to keep up with the latest real news and analysis.